Bebe with Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Thanks to Jenny Green for her entertainment this afternoon. It's Monday the 19th of October, and by the sounds of it in Leinster House, it's going to be game over for plenty, but it's still game on with us, guys.
Coming up today, the GAA is back, but for how long? We review the weekend's action as Level 5 looms.
And you know what, just in case we're being accused, lads, on this show, and me being accused of being not in touch with the young people, Mark Morden.
Surely not.
Can I tell you about Mark Morden? Mark Morden is a TikTok star. He has 18,000 followers. And I'll tell you this, not alone is he a brilliant footballer, but watch him. Look at his TikTok. He's one cool guy.
Surely you're on TikTok, Donica.
I'd love to see Pat Spillane on TikTok doing the WAP. Anyway, we'll move on. Stephen Kelly is standing by to discuss a weekend of late drama in the Premier League.
Cresswell sends it in towards Rice. He couldn't get near it. Snodgrass was hoping it would drop. Lanzini!
I just hit a sting there for fun.
Not sure why not, Marie. I mean, West Ham managed a comeback, but Racing Metro couldn't. We're going to get Donica's reaction to the Champions Cup final, and Donica has some good prizes to give away if you can get the questions right.
Yeah, we certainly do.
Marie, just she's so happy today, she just has to keep pressing the button.
Is it time to talk about the GAA yet? That's all I want to know.
You've had a good weekend of it, Marie. You must have enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was great. It really was. We're going to get into it in a while with Vinnie Corey, but we'll be talking to Damien Lawler first about what Level 5 means for Gaelic games. It is a bit of a conundrum at the moment, but if anyone has their views, send them in to us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. And Ruby did mention that we have a big prize to give away. Donica, what is it?
Yeah, we have a super prize with thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Green Firm. So we, on the show all week, we're going to be giving away different things. So Green Firm have just launched their new on-the-go range, which is 3 high-protein chicken snacks to choose from, all 100% natural. And they've put in this really handy little recyclable skewer so that you can eat it anywhere, Ruby.
Like a fork.
Well, it's a skewer, Marie. It's a recyclable skewer. So tonight's prize is fantastic. And with all the chats of Level 5, what do you need? You need a wellness hamper. So this has got it all. It's got a Fitbit, a Nutribullet, resistant band, and of course, plenty of nutritious Green Firm products for you to munch on. So Marie, how do you win it?
So all you need to do is answer the following question. This is a hard one now, Donica. Simon Zeebo plays for which French rugby club? If you know the answer, text the word green followed by your answer and name to 51552, and we'll pick a winner before the end of the show. As always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for more. Now we are going to get straight into it because there has been a lot of developments, unexpected developments this afternoon, I think. It's been widely reported that the Cabinet is meeting to finalise a plan to move the country to Level 5 restrictions until the end of November. And RTE News understands that the GAA Intercounty Championships, along with all elite sports and horse racing, can take place during Level 5 restrictions. We know that most of the sports that are going to take place are, of course, professional sports. The GAA is not professional, but does come under elite sport. And Damien Lawler joins us now for more on this. Damien, what we want to know is the GAA safe under Level 5, and will the players play?
Well, to me, Level 5 has always been strenuous, especially on my cross trainer. Once I get up to that level, I usually start to exercise myself to a level I can't contain anymore. So I don't have good feelings with Level 5, and I didn't think we'd have it with the GAA either, Marie. And even on your show last week, mentioned the fact that Antonista had indicated that under Level 5, we wouldn't have a championship. And that caught everybody in the hop because Croke Park and the GAA had felt otherwise. But by all accounts, the developments since then, we are going to have a GAA championship if reports are to be believed. We were talking about Level 4.5 this morning, where there would be exemptions made for elite sport and the championships. And fairly soon afterwards, the official GAA fixture list for the week came out. And I just thought to myself, right, well, that's a sign of positivity anyway. So, yeah, I think we're driving on as much as we can. What's not helping people in general is the amount of speculation, the amount of uncertainty. There's leaks coming left, right and centre. I think because the Cabinet is so diverse, there's different decisions being made or different ports of opinion being put forward. But like we have heard certainly no news that there will not be a championship taking place since last week's development. So that's what we have to go by. As regards to your second question, Marie, will the players play? Last weekend, they came out with 76% unanimously agreed that the 2020 intercounty season should proceed, subject to the additional safeguards and supports for the welfare of his members being put in. So 76% is a big figure. 52% were overall very happy to go. Another 24% wanted to go back, provided improvements were made to certain areas. And they're the latest figures that we have to go on. And I asked the question, if level 5 comes in, will that make a difference? But like the GPA's National Executive Committee, they've now got the power to make any further decisions regarding the continuation of the season on their players' behalf, Marie.
But Damien, on
players
Friday...
have mandated them due to that.
Yeah. On Friday, it was reported... Now, these reports might be inaccurate, but it was reported that the exec were mandated to not endorse the championship, not endorse their players playing the championship if the country moved into level 5.
Yeah, I went looking for... I found no official correspondence of that. Now, maybe I missed it, Marie, but I found nothing officially confirmed or clarified from that at all. Saw speculation of it, okay. No doubt about that, but I've not been able to confirm that anywhere. And I think really and truly it's a kind of an evolving situation, I'd say, in terms of there's 12 or 13 people on that NEC, and when they sat down to discuss the data findings of last Friday's GPA survey, they reached a conclusion and they were happy enough to proceed at that stage. So like I think that they'll have to make another maybe video call or conference call to discuss if we are going to level 5 and see where it takes us. But again, we've not heard at this stage that things are not going to proceed, and that's the way I'm working, because there's some amount of speculation out there. There's a lot of opinions, there's a lot of reportage, but we really have to cut to the facts at the moment. And the facts are that as of Friday, 3/4 of the players were surveyed and they want to play, and as far as we knew from the official channels, the GAA championships were still going ahead. Now, we're being drip-fed stuff today that if we go to level 5, the championships will still go ahead. They are coming from 6 or 7 heavyweight political reporters, but I guess we have to wait and see that being rolled out as fact yet. But again, no reasons to doubt that we won't, Marie. I don't think a huge amount has changed from black and white purposes.
So it sounds like the government are going to give the way. Now, has the GAA got the will to find a way? Will they all pull together and go about doing it? Or will this tit for tat, I want to, I don't want to, is that going to rumble on for the next 4 days?
Ruby, that's a very important point to make, because I think I meant to mention it. All people at the table now have to be together on this, and all stakeholders have to be on the same hymn sheet, and we're either having a championship or we're not. I would feel at this stage, and I've said this numerous times on your show, and I've stuck by this the whole way through, the government do want this championship to go ahead. And I've given my reasons for saying that. They want people to have a lift. They want people's mental health to be improved. And they want to raise the morale and give people something to talk about. And if you cast your head over your right shoulder or left shoulder, you'll see the darkness out there at the moment and the impending doom that's going to come upon us in the next few hours. So I can understand all that. I've made the point too that like this weekend gone by has helped. Matters were controlled very strictly. I was down in Semple Stadium yesterday, and it's as strict as I've ever seen it. So I think, yeah, I think all parties have to be on board here, the government, the players, the GAA, and I think you're going at it now. A championship that starts this weekend, all the championships, you know, from the Christie Ring, the provincial championships, they all roll out on Saturday evening, guys. So like time is not with us anymore.
And I know, Damien, you mentioned that 24% were happy enough to go with the championship if additional safety protocols were put in place. And that's fair enough. And we made the point on Friday that it was very late in the day to be having that survey and to be asking for protocols. Subsequently, then, Bevan Duffy from Louth came out over the weekend and he said that there's been no testing at all and he can't get his head around it. And he said, surely before the start of the National League campaign, every county, intercounty squad should have been tested, simple as. And when you look at it as well, Damien, the breakdown of players. Now, we haven't got it from that were surveyed, yes. But I'd imagine that it's fairly easy to speculate which ones wanted to go ahead and which ones don't, and it's probably the ones that aren't contenders that don't want it to go ahead, but they have as much power as anybody.
Yeah, Marie, I think that when the 24% stat came through, that was with a caveat that stronger testing protocols were needed, stricter compliance and oversight of COVID-19 protocols in all counties were needed. And then I think they wanted the use of the safest venue for games, and that's a very fair point as well. As regards the Bevan Duffy comment, I mean, I was reading the story there today. That's an intriguing one, because when you see him coming out and saying there was no testing done, initially it's eye-catching and it's startling. But, I mean, look, at I looked up again the official correspondence on this, and the GAA rapid testing programme is there for everybody to use. It's there for use to some or all players in the week of a game where counties believe it's necessary to do so, Marie. So all counties were informed of this last Tuesday, of all the agreed protocols, and the GPA signed off on this and stuff like that too. So it's actually up to each county to determine the need and then make the request for testing. So, like Wexford did that, and 54 players got tested in the hurling, and both the Wexford hurling and football squad stepped down for a week. But they actually sensed an area of concern, and they went looking for testing, and they got it, and the results were back very quickly. And you had two hurlers isolating and four footballers isolating, but both squads were back training within a couple of days. So I have to say that, you know, Bevan Duffy's comments are there, and that's his opinion. But certainly it's up to his county to look for it, or it's up to any particular county to go looking for it.
Damien, we've also spoke about the integrity of the competitions on numerous occasions as well. And at that stage, when we spoke to you last, nobody had pulled out of any competition. That obviously changed then on Saturday morning when Leitrim opted not to travel to play their league game. What if this happens again now and then happens regularly?
Well, I mean, in terms of the National League, if it happens, the points scored are forfeited, as simple as that. I think in terms of the Championship, it's a different ball game. Like, I think that unless there's a practical reason for postponing a game, Marie, or unless there's 13 days between the next fixture and it's reasonable to postpone that game, Well, then you're in trouble. I mean, at the end of the day, there is a chance, in my own opinion, that this year's championship could be delayed. It would be very, very hard for me to see this going seamlessly and straight down the line. So I think you're going to have lots of hurdles along the way. And I think we're coming near the end of the Allianz League. And I'm thankful for that, to be honest with you, because I think some games are going to be dead rubber now, but others are promotion and relegation. They're still up for grabs. And I think that when you have counties pulling out for whatever reason, and it wasn't nice to see Fermanagh playing with 18 players, but at least they fielded the team, so they tried their best. But you're right, it's not nice to see it. I would feel myself, the championship starts this weekend, you know, with the knockout nature of it, you'd be down to a certain amount of counties within a very short period of time. And I don't think it'll be the problem that it probably has been for the National League, Marie.
In saying all of this and asking these hard questions as well, you know, I did enjoy the games over the weekend and they were brilliant and it was fantastic to see. But it's the fact that they're amateur players and it needs to be examined quite closely. And Damien, just on ladies football, Camogie under 20, is all that deemed as elite sport?
Yeah, I think so, Marie. I think it's going to be the GAA's call. And certainly with the ladies football and Camogie, they're proceeding with their own paths also. And like, you know, the minor under 20s, they're certainly deemed adult competition that fall under the elite category. Now, if we move to level five, are those two affected? I suppose we're looking for more clarification on that now. But in terms of certainly when the Northern Ireland Assembly met last week, it seems like about 6 months ago, Marie. But when they met last week to discuss what was going ahead and what wasn't, minor and under 20 were included in that bracket as well. So I think you've got an under 20 final in Port Laois this Saturday coming. So, like, I mean, that's a huge, huge game. And I think they will consider themselves elite athletes. They're adult players and playing for their county as well.
And just finally, Damien, look, I think everybody I know enjoyed the games at the weekend, but then you go on to social media and there's this, like, the GAA is trending and it's not for positive reasons. And it's very hard to kind of nearly find the balance there, really, like who wants it to go ahead, who doesn't, and where the rights and wrongs are.
If you're looking for balance, I wouldn't go to social media, Marie. That's my own personal opinion.
Oh,
genuinely,
I think she learned that this week already, Damien. I think with her little tweet about Sergio Aguero, she realised what Twitter really is like.
I know what it's like to be Ruby Walsh
now. She mightn't go back there again so quickly.
Right. Yeah, look, it's not a great place to go for balance, to be honest with you. But I sometimes feel that those who speak loudest speak on social media, and it's very, very hard to get a reasonable debate going on a forum like Twitter, for example, where you need so few words. So I don't think it's the place that you get. But look,
I don't think everybody's happy either, Damien. Like, okay, gauging text messages, people on the street, general opinion. Not everybody is happy that they can't go and see their grandmother, but yet 30 lads can go out and train in a field and go and play a match.
Yeah, you're right. And look, I mean, the truth of it is, for an old dinosaur like myself, social media is where certain people do congregate and do communicate. So, like, you have to recognise that as well. And you are right. Not everybody's happy with this. But I think from my own perspective, just seeing the way players approach the games and seeing the way the GAA have approached the safety of it, certainly this weekend, just it was a reminder. I think a lot of people would have reflected on all the games we saw visually on TV or streaming over the weekend, and I think it's helped people along. I think it's a safe enough environment, personally, once you're there. It's the to-ing and fro-ing that's caused all the problem. I don't think with an emotive issue like this you're ever going to get a straightforward approval for it. So I think you have to minimise risk, and ultimately, if Enfit say that this championship can go ahead, and if the government wanted to go ahead, well, then it's very, very hard for the championship not to go ahead.
Okay, well, I think the players will have their say as well, Damien. We'll wait and hear from the GPA. But look, thanks a million for joining us. We appreciate it and we'll talk to you soon. One thing the GAA did give us was a lot to talk about after the weekend, and we will talk to Vinnie Corey about it a little bit later on. But there was a huge amount of sport. Guys, Donica, a sporting highlight?
Yeah, I agree with you, Marie. It was great to see so much on. I'm going to go to the rugby, though, I'll be completely honest with you. Exeter Chiefs beating Racing. And look, it's been the kind of fairy tale story. Obviously, I was shouting for Racing because of the Munster involvement of the three lads. I thought Zeebo was incredible. I was actually shocked they took him off. I don't know what your take on that was. He'd scored two tries.
Why do you think they took him off? Yeah, I was wondering.
Well, of course, if you've Curtly Beale on the bench, you want to get him on the pitch. But Zeebo was running hot, and he's the type of player that would have got a hat-trick, and in a big game like that, I would have put him on the left wing and left him out there. But they went another way with it. So, yeah, that was definitely...
But does it all boil back to Finn Russell's wayward pass?
But can I just, if you watch both of those passes back, if you watch the pass for Zeebo, Zeebo's try, it's the exact same pass, Ruby.
In the opposition 22, not in his own.
I understand, but what Zeebo does is he runs a late overs line, so he attracts the defender, whereas the one that gets picked off, I don't know who it is, but he's running away from the ball, so he's never a threat. And when you're playing against good opposition, the likes of Stuart Hogg, these guys just pick off those types of passes. And I thought, of course, that's what you get with Finn Russell. I would actually hate to play with him because you just don't know what you're going to get. But in a team like Racing, it's all or nothing moments.
It's like a box of chocolates. I actually thought the New Zealand-Australia game was better, and to be honest with you, what about the winger? I mean, it's 26 years ago since John Olomo appeared on the scene. Have they replaced him with Caleb Clark?
Caleb Clark was amazing, wasn't he? Like, it's rare you see someone getting a standing ovation coming off. He's 21 years of age. He got his debut last week against New Zealand. But Ruby, he was reckless in contact, wasn't he? Just
It was like putting Paul O'Connell on the wing and just... revving him up to be able to run fast enough. Yeah,
he's way more here than Paul O'Connell. But do you know what? There's a stat in rugby called metres after contact. So when you initially hit something, how many metres you make or how many tackles you break after it. And Caleb Clark's metres after contact are incredible. Of course,
it reminds you of John Olomo.
It did. And the thing about it was, John Olomo was kind of going up against amateurs. Everyone is fit and strong now. Everyone's really good rugby players. And he was able to run over him. But
were you happy for Exeter?
Do you know what?
No.
Well, I never like seeing an English team win it, but Exeter, you'd give an exception with it. Do you know what? It made me a little bit sad because what I realised with Exeter winning is hard work still wins. You know what I mean? If you work hard enough, you can still win things. And I think we all look at rugby nowadays and say, oh, you need the best of talent, which maybe Saracens and other teams have done over the while, but Exeter proves if you're willing to work your arse off, you can win it. What about you, Ruby? Highlight?
Oh, I think Holly Doyle, without doubt. I think riding the double in Ascot on Saturday, winning the long distance cup in Trushan and the sprint on Glen Shiel, to me, it just shows in horse racing, it doesn't matter what gender you are, what race you are, or who you are. It's if you have the talent, you will succeed in horse racing. She's very small, she's only 8 stone in weight, but she has the talent. And to watch her on Glen Shiel put a whip from her left hand to her right hand and back into her left, and she walked into Ascot on Saturday, Donica, and there's no sport in the world can say this, with the possibility of earning the exact same money as everybody else. Frankie Dettori, Ryan Moore, anybody else was there, Holly Doyle was getting the same riding fee and riding for the same percentage. Man, woman, it doesn't matter. It's if you have the talent, and she is now a good jockey, not a lady jockey, just a jockey.
That's brilliant.
Ruby, just on that, you mentioned the skill of changing the whip. Like, does that come with the confidence in knowing you're on it?
No, it's technique and practice and hard work, Donica, and not everybody can do it. If you're naturally right-handed, you must practice everything with your left. You have to learn. You can't, footballers can play with one foot or the other and be a bit weaker on one and get away with their strong foot. You cannot get to the top as a jockey and have a weak hand. You have to be as, what is it, ambidextrous? Is that the word? You have to be as good with your left and your right.
Well, my highlight is someone that is going to be playing for Ireland and will not be earning the same as her male counterparts, but that's a whole other discussion. It was Katie McCabe's gold for Arsenal in the North London Derby against Spurs at the weekend. It was an absolute cracker, and I actually have the commentary.
Leading with pace by McCabe. Oh, wow! What a start to this North London Derby for the Gunners. Katie McCabe finds the top corner. The goalkeeper, Spencer, rooted to the spot.
Marie, she certainly found the top corner, didn't she? It was a brilliant strike.
Marie's on mute. But anyway,
your mic's down. Brilliant.
She turns the studio back on there in a minute. She's just forgetting to press the buttons now. She can't press the buttons.
Strike, Marie.
It really was. Look, it's a massive week for women's football. I'm very excited about it. They're heading over to the Ukraine for an absolutely crucial game on Friday. So they are second in their group behind Germany, and they have two games left. So a win or a draw against the Ukraine will secure a playoff, and they could also still clinch the best runner-up spot. So it's just brilliant to see the women's players doing so well and the days running up to that game, because, you know, they're going to need everything.
How many of them are professional?
Well, most of the Ireland team would be professional. They're playing in different clubs around the world, really. A lot of them playing in the Women's Super League. Louise Quinn is playing in Italy. Denise O'Sullivan was in America and she's back. But there are some squad members who are playing here in Ireland. So Anya Gorman will be one of the fullbacks, all going to plan on Friday. And she's an amateur player playing for Piemont. So she'd be one of the few now starting that wouldn't be a professional, but she would definitely treat the game as a professional. So in ways,
amateurs willing to get on with it and just where there's a will find
a way. Yeah,
no,
she did try. She did go to England and played for Doncaster Bells and played in the original Women's Super League, but that club ended up folding and she came back. And Anya's a little bit older. She's over 100 caps now, and she had retired for a while and came back. So she did try it. A few of the girls have gone to some of the Scandinavian countries as well to try and become pro footballers. But you have to remember as well, Ruby, that like that Women's Super League is only in its infancy, so that pathway wasn't always there. I think a lot of the girls coming through now will be able to go and play there with some of the best players in the world and go to other leagues as well that are all growing. So it's kind of you know, the all tides rising boats line that I can't remember exactly right now, but I think in time we'll see most of them, like Rhianna Jarrett was with Wexford Utes and she moved over to Brighton as well. So the more of them that playing at the top level, the better. And they're certainly getting there, and hopefully they'll get a big win now on Friday.
I just think that they're amateurs able to find a way to do it in the COVID lockdown. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah, we'll be talking about
to find a way to Germany and onto the Ukraine. If it needs to be done, you can find a way.
Okay, well, on that wise note, let's take a break.
With Green Farm, a 100% natural range of cooked chicken, turkey and beef. Natural protein, your way.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now, another high-scoring Premier League weekend left the title race wide open as Liverpool suffered the devastating blow of losing Virgil van Dijk to a knee injury. Aston Villa are the only side with a 100% record after Ross Barkley's late winner beat Leicester 1-0. And Chelsea and Tottenham's title credentials, I think, are in question now. Stephen Kelly joins us to go through it all. Stephen, a busy weekend, but I think we should really start with van Dijk because he's going to be out for a while and it does leave a lot of questions around Liverpool and what they are going to do with the back. Matip potentially injured. Gomez, a lot of question marks around him as well. So they're really, really in bother with 6 games in 18 days.
Yeah, it's a huge, huge blow for them. And I think what's so evident is that how many times are we on here talking about how much of an impact he is, how influential he is in the team, how important he is to that squad. So how they're going to react without having someone who we basically said that their ability to go on and win titles and win championships and win the Champions League has been because of the introduction of Virgil van Dijk, and without him in the team, what does that do to them? I think it's absolutely biggest loss of almost any team in the league. You're going to lose somebody, but can they cope around them? I'm not sure. It's huge.
Stephen, just on the challenge itself, there'll be no repercussions for Jordan Pickford over it. What did you make of it?
It's a horrendous challenge. It's like absolutely horrific challenge. He 100% should have been... They should have looked at it again, decided that it was... Listen, he may not have intended to do that, but the height of it, the speed of it, the loss of control of it, these are all the things that they check when they check it for a red card in normal play. It's whether he's in control, whether he's... All those things. He had none of them, and it was a horrific challenge. 100% he should be getting punished for that.
And obviously there was no red card, listening to Stuart Gallagher earlier on Sky. There was a three-step process. So they checked, A, was it a penalty? Then they checked for offside. It was offside. Mm-hmm. So that ruled out the penalty. And then it forgot to go to step three, which was sending them off. Was it as simple as that?
Yeah, it's a ridiculous, ridiculous rule. And what's the point in having a video referee if you're not going to, you know, get it correct? There should be no real reason for them to get decisions like that wrong. Anybody watching that game would have said, that's a sending off. It's a terrible tackle. Look at the condition the player's in, and there's no way he was in control of his body when he went into the tackle. They're the rules of the game. He absolutely should be sent off, and if he wasn't sent off at the time, we should have been able to go back and say it's a ban.
And when you watched the last play of the game as well, Mane offside for the Henderson goal, could you determine if he was offside or not? I most certainly couldn't.
No, absolutely not. And that's the thing. It's another thing. It's just... We're crazy to think that we're literally splitting hairs to see whether a player's offside. For me, as a defender, I hated the rule that the centre-forward's got the advantage because it would go against me. But honestly, I'd be begging for that to come back to put the game back into perspective, because those decisions being made where someone is literally that close and you cannot see it and you're breaking it down frame by frame by frame to see if they're offside, it has to be with the decision. You have to let those go.
And moving on now, Stephen, there was a couple of games that I found quite entertaining, probably for all the wrong reasons. I do seem to like bad defending. I just find that it can be quite fun when it's not your team. And I think for Spurs fans, conceding those goals was pretty bad.
Yeah, it was. Like the last goal, unbelievable strike, top corner, fantastic. The Sanchez own goal, just the cross comes in, he throws his body away, gets the keeper on, and then, you know, the first one as well. But to be in that control, that comfortable, Kane hit the post as well, Bale went through one-on-one, unbelievable bit of play, and they looked really formidable going forward. They looked unstoppable. So to concede three goals like that in the last 7 minutes of normal time, it's pretty simple, all right? But I just kind of feel if they can get that right, well, what a chance they have to achieve some of the season, because the attacking potency they have is just phenomenal.
I honestly thought, when you listen to Mourinho's comments after, when you get a draw out of a goal like Lanzini's, I mean, it's just not going to go with you. I mean, how often do they go in? That was a Hail Mary of a shot. Like.
It was. They just dropped him and he smashed his head in the cannon and literally ended up in the top stanchion. Like a fantastic striking. But to consider that you're 3-0 up and to concede a goal like that in the last minute to draw, that's what, to be in a position where that's happened, they shouldn't be. Like,
Man United scored all the goals against Newcastle. They put themselves behind with Luke Shaw's own goal and then managed to drag four back and win quite impressively in the end.
Yeah, they did, and a penalty save as well, so you know it could have been more comfortable. Newcastle, who are always going to be, you know, up and down, I think they have moments of brilliance, but I think they're going to be a team that, you know, you can put goals past. And Man U showed some, they were quite clinical in the last few minutes of the game. They were knocking at the door for quite a while. They looked like they were good going forward. And defensive, they limited Newcastle to not too many chances, so it was a better performance than them all around.
Good goal from Wan-Bissaka.
Yeah, great strike again, another fabulous strike, and a player who were always, I suppose, complimenting his defensive abilities because he's very good in one-on-one situations and he's strong on the tackle. But it's a lovely one too, not even just the strike of the ball, the positioning to sense it, to pass, the layoff, the run around the corner, and then the finish was fantastic. First touch and the strike in the top corner. So, no, great goal from him.
A lot of praise for Harry Maguire. He'd been the topic of conversation for all the wrong reasons in the run up to this game, but now he seems to be redeeming himself.
Yeah, it was really, I say, for his own personal kind of strife at the moment to get a goal that was a leveler as well, put his team back in it, being captain of that club, like the pressure that goes with it, undoubted to have happened, what money went into that, should do, and everything else that's gone on the press, you know, he's been under a lot of pressure from external factors too. So, you know, for him, I'm sure that was a huge milestone, and it's going to be great for his, you know, his personality and his character and his confidence going forward for the rest of the season. I think it's a big stepping stone for him.
I know City got all the points against Arsenal, but it looked a pretty even game, and Edison was pretty good in goal. But should Sergio Aguero have walked for putting his arm around the lineswoman?
Honestly, when you see it and you see it slow down and it's play by play, you kind of think it looks really wrong. And I'd love to get Marie's point of view on it, because from your point of view, it probably could be different to mine or the lads sitting here, I think, because you're a woman in the sport and you've been around male-dominated positions. Even now, you're surrounded by three guys talking to you about it. So, you know, I'd really love to hear what you thought about it.
Well, there's a couple of things I think about it. A GA player was sent off over the weekend for putting his hand on the referee, so yeah. I think that at no stage should anybody be allowed to put their hand on the referee. Now, I know that I put up a tweet and there was lots of responses to it, and people were saying, well, he does it to men all the time. But I think that there is a bigger picture here, and there's lots of societal issues out there, and at no stage should any man be excused for putting a hand on a woman. I don't care in what capacity, it just shouldn't be allowed. And that, okay, I know she's doing his job, he's doing his job, but I don't think it's right. It didn't feel right. The responses to it didn't seem right either. I know people are saying that it will set the quest for equality back a little bit, but I don't think so. I think that the biggest thing here is that at no stage in life should there be an excuse for a man to put his hand on a woman in an aggressive way, and for me, that's what it looked like.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely spot on, because I think the thing is, people are saying, you know, she's a lines woman, she's in the game, she should be treated the same as a man. But I think we all, as men or as a man, like I've been surrounded with women my whole life, my wife, my mom, my daughter, my sisters, my sister-in-laws, my mother-in-law, all these people, and I think you have to be a gentleman, you have to have respect. And if you do that to a man, that's not something that you should do to a woman. And you should realise that there's a difference there when you do something like that.
It's not an equality issue. I think it's right and wrong.
No, what he did was wrong.
Absolutely.
I think you've nailed it, Emery. I think it's absolutely is wrong because of. And if people are saying, well, equality, I don't think that comes into it. It's because of the respect you should have, regardless of it being a man or a woman, you shouldn't do it. But the fact that it was a woman, I think it makes it a lot worse.
And I think Pep's response was actually really disappointing as well. It was very much, it smacked of, oh, he's not that type of guy, you know, and I just think that's thrown out there all the time to excuse irresponsible and bad behaviour.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more, mate.
Anyway, Raheem Sterling scored an all right goal. City got the 3 points. Yadida, move on. The other half of Manchester, the blue half, we're not going to talk about them. Chelsea, Southampton, Theo Werner, first couple of goals, and they were pretty good ones. Well, the first one was in particular.
Yeah, the first one was excellent. Just the little, let the ball go through his legs, the pace to get away from him, and as he goes through, the composure to come inside, take a touch, take another touch, and then finish it. But, you know, we spoke about Chelsea, the money spent, and we all said they'd spent money on real quality and players that have proven to be extremely good on the European stage, and it would take time for them to gel. But even for the last goal, the little bit of play between himself and Pulisic, when he goes through, he finds the Havertz and he puts it away. But, you know, I think for Werner, the composure for the second goal as well, like, he looks like a really good player, and, you know, Chelsea have got someone that's going to score a lot of goals for them.
They'll get plenty of goals, no doubt, Stephen, but their defence is awful, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been that last season there was an issue. They were trying to get it right and bringing in Thiago, who I felt was a stopgap, but wasn't going to be someone who they're going to, you know, he's not going to be there for years. He's 35, and again, loads and loads of experience, a proven player on the international stage and the European stage of PSG. But I think defensively, that's where they're going to be at trouble, because teams are free flowing, teams are full of confidence. It's like they've been unleashed. I think the lack of fans is just teams going forward. They seem so confident, and defensively, it's almost like you're not getting under pressure. You're not, the fans aren't making you make tackles. They're not there to criticise you when you're not getting in position and covering around. So, you know, the strikers have been let loose, and the defenders have been a bit lackluster and not concentrating as much. So I think that's down to the fans.
Lampard has been in charge for 62 games, and in that time, Chelsea have only kept 15 clean sheets. At what stage do we need to start pointing the finger at Lampard, though, that what he's doing isn't working?
Well, I think it's absolutely going to get pointed at him at some point this season, because the amount of money he spent, the players he's brought in, again, really, really talented. But if they don't achieve something, they're not really pushing for the title at the end of the season, or before then even, he's going to be under some amount of pressure because, you know, Abramovich is not going to see the money he spent and not be getting results. He wants instantaneous results. I know Lampard there last year, there was a huge onus on bringing the young players through, and it worked well from our times. They were able to get Champions League football. But this season, to completely revert from that and go all out guns blazing and spending money in the window, there's going to be a lot more expectation and a lot more pressure on the results.
Stephen, we can predict a lot of things in life, but if you predict that Aston Villa could potentially be top of the league after five games, they have a game in hand, they're only a point behind Everton, yeah, and they got Ross Barkley got a screamer to get the last, to get, yeah, the 3 points late on Saturday.
Oh, yeah, no chance. Like, Mystic Meg is not going to predict that Villa are going to be pushing top of the table, 100% record. But, they're, again, another team that the shackles are off. And I really feel, and I don't know, this is my kind of observation, Rob, but, like, those historically big teams who fans have such high expectations of them, but you haven't really achieved anything in the last kind of 15, 20 years, Everton, Villa, Newcastle, clubs like that, that the fans have, when you're at a game for them, there's this expectancy, and you know it's never good enough. Where without those fans there putting that pressure on the players, they seem to be thriving. And you know, I'm not putting down their fans, but it seems to have a huge impact on them. They're playing free flowing football. They brought in some good players, and it's like they don't feel that constant judgment that they should be doing better. Our teams in the past have done better than what they're currently doing, and they'll never live up to what was before them. And I honestly think it's a really interesting kind of thing on the psyche of what's going on in the league at the moment.
It is good to watch, and it was a great weekend. Liverpool drew, United won. Stephen Kelly, thanks a million. We'll talk to you again next week.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. Just to remind everyone, we have a brilliant wellness hamper from our sponsors, Green Farm. This is full of nutritional goodies. There's a Fitbit in there, a Nutribullet, resistant bands, and all the Green Farm products, which include their high-protein chicken snack, which is now available in all your good shops, and it's got a nice little recyclable skewer.
I'm very curious about the recyclable skewer. I'm going to have to get a pack just so I can see if it's a fork.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, if you do want to win it, all you have to do is answer the following question. Simon Zeebo plays for which French rugby club? Text the word green, followed by your answer and name to 51552, and we'll pick a winner before the end of the show. As always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply, so see 2fm.ie for more. Now, it's time. Come on, Ruby.
We're going to go something else first. We can't be going to GA. There's no way after all these.
There is no stopping me.
There's no way after keeping this long. Well, actually, there is a bit of breaking news, Donica. Wasps Exeter this weekend, yes, in the Premiership final. Wasps has now 11 positive cases for coronavirus, and there will be a decision tomorrow whether that match will go ahead or not.
Four more today, Ruby, and it shows the ruthless side of it. I think everyone goes, oh, professional bubbles, but if Wasps can't perform, out you go and Bristol come in. A game goes ahead, there will be a final. It's set, you know what I mean? Twickenham is ready to play, and Wasps, you can't fulfill this fixture.
I wonder, are the GAA listening? Dublin
well,
can't play the final. Bring back in Mead.
Vinnie Corey is listening. Vinnie, what if that happens in the GAA? A team have to step aside and someone has to stand in an All-Ireland final. Can you imagine it?
No, I can't, but listen, it's good to be back talking about it anyway. Yeah, after 6 months out.
It really
might
has.
Look, might be Kildare's best chance of winning one.
You'd have to be up near the semi-final stage for that, Ruby.
Oh, it's gone ruthless. Very early.
Oh, that was low, wasn't it?
That was low. Anyway,
did you
Vinnie, look.
Happened at the weekend?
Yeah, in Division 2.
They were brilliant.
There's a ruthless Murray Crow in this evening.
Claire
start
had to
with
take
Galway
on
Mayo,
poor Fermanagh with only half a team. Like,
they actually travelled with 26 players. But anyway, right, we're going to get on to Division 1 because that is really where the All-Ireland contenders come from more often than not. And look, I think Mayo, when it comes to All-Ireland contenders, there's definitely a lot of talk about them because of their performance against Galway. And Vinnie, it was quite an unexpected one. And when you look at what James Horan did, it was quite clever, really, moving Conor Loftus to midfield and Aidan O'Shea in full forward, creating a lot of space for those around him, and they made the most of it.
Yeah, completely different to what we saw earlier in the year from Mayo. I suppose we had spoke about Mayo earlier in the year, and we were saying, you know, there didn't seem to be any real chemistry in the team. You know, there's no real drive or desire present in them, but completely different. Yes, they completely out of the blue. And you said there, James Horne, he has to take a lot of credit. You know, there was a lot of freshness. You could get that freshness from the Mayo team yesterday. And as you said, positional switchers, Conor Loftus would usually be a forward, maybe starting, maybe coming on as a sub. He played the full game at midfield yesterday, which was different. Aidan O'Shea staying in a more advanced role for most of the game and very, very effective in there. He has kept the experiment from early in the year of leaving Lee Keegan corner back. So those things have freshened up the team. Plus, a lot of new players in. You know, they probably got a lot of highlights from yesterday. You know, Mark Moran. Oisin Mullen has probably been Mayo's best player this year. He got his debut. He's been excellent. He was excellent yesterday again. But, you know, I suppose there was a lot of talk this year about the club scene. It was great to get back for the club. But it's definitely been a big advantage for James Horne in a personal sort of way. I suppose when he stepped down as Mayo manager a few years ago, I'm sure the phone would have been hopping maybe to take up another county team. But he threw himself back into the Mayo club scene. And, you know, he managed Westport, and you've seen last year when they won the National League, he brought in a lot of new players last year. I was thinking about Matthew Owen, Fionn McDonough from Westport. No, and they went and won the league, and they brought that freshness. And he's done the same now with boys in club form. Like, there was four Westport players involved yesterday. So maybe, you know, I'm not saying managers will always give players a chance, but maybe being involved in the Mayo club scene this last number of years, he knows these players inside out. Different to another county manager perhaps going to watch a game, he has to analyse these players for Westport and all the rest, so he knows their strengths and weaknesses.
And Finney, just a small observation as well, when you think about Mayo, usually a lot of the squad are based in Dublin, but everybody's working from home, so there's probably more of them down at home as well over the last few months.
Yeah, definitely, and that, listen, that might add to the freshness as well. So listen, it was an outstanding performance, but that sort of fresh, and listen, still players to come back. You think of the likes of Jason Doherty, Donald Vaughan, Shamie O'Shea, Brendan Harrison, no Keith Higgins yesterday. So listen, they're looking good.
Mark Moran, sorry, Ruby,
go on. Obvious, Marie, to me and to both of you actually watching it, how fast and fresh Mayo looked, how giddy almost they were. And like even Paddy Durkin from right half back cropping up at right corner forward to score a goal. The energy of the Mayo team just looked incredible to
watch. And that pace all over the field, as you say, Ruby, you know, pace from the back. McLaughlin, a young fella in his first year, he played a few games early in the year, but yesterday was probably his best game. McLaughlin, Oisin Mullen, we said, no, that pace bombing forward, Paul Durkin as well, bombing forward. And then, you know, inside, Tommy Conroy as well, you know, pace. So definitely that freshness. And they were playing on the front foot and didn't look like a team that was playing under pressure.
Vinny, just on that, if they looked so fresh, Galway looked flat, didn't they? They looked leggy. It, for me, it kind of smelled of Rugby World Cup 2007. You're trying to go all out as much as you can, but it's just not there at the moment.
Jim McGuinness.
Well, Jim McGuinness does like mind games, so I mean, you could throw that in as well. But they still scored 17 points and had over 70% shooting return. Like, we can't really write them off after one bad game, Vinny.
No, you can't write them off. And listen, everybody's going in thinking something different. They might have been thinking, listen, we're safe in the league, we've got our work done early, now it's time to maybe focus on maybe playing Mayo later on in the championship perhaps. But Galway were missing a right few players. Shane Walsh was probably player of the league up until that. He wasn't playing yesterday. They had a good young Mulcairn was full back early in the year. He didn't play yesterday. No, Sean Kelly beside him, Bradshaw, John Daly, Owen Branley. They were missing players, but Mayo just seemed to have that more intensity. You know, they absolutely blitzed them, especially on the Galway kickout. You know, they absolutely destroyed the Galway kickout, and Galway were left with no option but to keep kicking it out long. And every time they kicked it out long, Mayo won it, but they got score after score after score. So at half time, the game was over. Galway weren't at the races, but you know, we've seen early in the year, I suppose, Tyrone got absolutely hammered by Galway, and the next weekend they beat Dublin. So you just never know what way teams are thinking or what way they're conditioning themselves or when they want to peak.
And Pádraig Joyce did say afterwards that it was the worst day in Galway football that he'd experienced in 43 years as a player, so you can be sure that he's going to bounce back to that one. I'd say you were definitely watching Kerry and Monaghan over the weekend, and I think everyone's talking about David Clifford, but I don't think you can talk about Clifford without talking about Brosnan and just the way that they alternated, and they were just impossible to tag then.
The war, and we all know how good David Clifford is, you know, brilliant and, you know, can score from nearly every angle, very hard to mark. but he's also, you know, a really good player of the playoff, and you can't say that about many top marksmen. Usually they turn and are thinking about their score, but he set up just as much as he scored. As you say, Brosnan seemed to have that understanding with him. A great crossfield ball in the first half, Clifford won it, Brosnan off the shoulder, a score. So they're very elusive in there, and I suppose they were missing players as well. But the thing that really shook me about Kerry was how defensive they were against Monaghan, and I don't think the Monaghan players were expecting it. Kerry seemed happy. They pushed up a wee bit on Rory Beggins' kick-out, but as soon as Rory took it short, all the Kerry players got back, even Clifford at times, 15 men behind the ball. And there was just a predictable pattern after a while. Monaghan kicked it out short, worked it out to the 65, up to the opposition 45, and then they got stripped of the ball, and Kerry came on the attack. So you wouldn't really associate that with Kerry, and I'm sure it's true through the Monaghan players as well. And I'm not sure if Kerry's going to play like that going forward, but it definitely was effective on Saturday.
Well, they've added serious pace as well to their game with O'Connor in midfield and the former Gavin White as well, who's a bit like Jack McCaffrey with the way he runs at teams. But Monaghan, Vinny, like, it's really hard to know where they're at, because we were speaking about Andrew Woods on Friday, and, you know, kind of excited about him and how he was going to get on, and he was taken off then, as was Conor McCarthy, and then you had to bring on McGuinness and McManus, and it was them who brought the bigger return, but it was off the bench, and that kind of seems to be the way it's working now with Monaghan.
Yeah, and I suppose that the forwards themselves, I'm sure Conor McCarthy and Andrew Woods would have rather started the second half, because the way Kerry played in the first half, 15 men behind the ball, they didn't really get a chance to shine, although Andrew Woods got the first score, a very good score. But and then it opened up a bit in the second half and probably suited the men that came in. But, you know, it was probably a wee bit flat for Monaghan. You'd be a wee bit disappointed, because they really have to beat Meath now this weekend, which is a precarious situation for them, because they're out early in the Championship. They have Cavan in the Championship the following weekend, and I know they'll be keeping one eye on that. But if they lose to Meath, they're out of Division 1. So they kind of have to go hard this weekend, and even though they have Cavan in the Championship the following weekend. So it's a tricky one.
Meath were impressive, and they stayed with Dublin for a long period of the game. But I think what was intriguing everybody was Desi Farrell's team selection. And he did take some chances. He'd Murphy in a corner back. Robbie McDade got in as well, a wing back. And O'Connella, who was there under Jim Gavin, was a surprising addition at midfield. And then Eric Lowndes at wing forward. So he's mixing things up.
Yeah, and has done that. And, you know, that's typical Dublin, I suppose, in the league. They are going to give players their chance. And especially now, they have time to do it. They're safe in the league now as well. So they're going to do that. I suppose the first game back, it's hard to be critical. It definitely wasn't vintage Dublin. They had started off really, really well, and put the Meath kick out under serious pressure at the start, and you know, maybe kept 1-3 very early on. But I suppose from the, you know, midway through the first half till the water break in the second half, you know, they completely went off the boil. You know, an awful lot of turnovers that you wouldn't associate with Dublin. And Meath in that period probably outscored them 8-2. Now, in the final, after the water break then, it was back to vintage Dublin, close out the game. Their main men, Kieran Kilkenny, Conor O'Callaghan, chipped in with the scores. But it, for a while there, it was turnover after turnover that you wouldn't associate with Dublin. So, listen, that's the rustiness. You can't read too much into it, because you know the players that have to come back. You know they can go up another few gears, so... They're still there thereabouts.
And when you think about it, that the Dublin forward scored 113 from play, and the Mayo forward scored 110, and we're going on about them. So Dublin have done something, and that has kept them under the radar a little bit, which is strange.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and like I said at the start, you know, teams are thinking different things of when they want to peak. They're probably looking ahead, seeing the first few games, just about getting boys back to the pace of it. Get back into Croke Park for the Championship, and then up it, and maybe looking ahead, thinking they don't have to be in top form for the first few rounds of Leinster.
Vinny, and you said rustiness there about Dublin, but it was more on the backs and fouls they're giving away, the turnovers they were giving away. It was across their back line more so than forward from midfield, which is uncharacteristic for them. You say rustiness, is it a new manager, a new system? Is there anything that anybody could look into, or are people just trying to find something?
Think of the Kildare here now.
I don't know. I think we're always going to try to find some sort of chink in the armoury of Dublin. And listen, any time they have a below par performance, you nearly find yourself jumping on it, hoping that, okay, there's a weakness. But then the next game they come out and they could blitz somebody. But there were a lot of turnovers. They were sloppy early on in the league too, and there were turnovers. And just you know, indiscipline, giving away a free, and then maybe, I don't know if there was back chat, but a lot of frees being taken up in the scoring positions and that there. They probably coughed up two good goal chances too from turnovers, only Cluxton did very well. So I'm sure, listen, they got the win, they're back on track, but they, from their own high standards, they look at that performance and they'll see plenty of room for improvement.
In Donegal and Tyrone, we were expecting a shadow boxing. Did we get it?
Maybe from Tyrone, I don't know, but definitely not from Donegal. The sense I got was that Donegal really went for the game. And even, I suppose, with no crowd now and that, you really heard it on the television. They were loud and they were noisy. And their game management was very, very good. You know, really attacked Niall Morgan's kick out, and that would be a strength for Tyrone. But you know, the game management, I think there was a stage in the first half, Niall O'Donnell won a mark, and Frank Burns caught him high, so Niall O'Donnell went down, and he was down for a few minutes. But you could see the Donegal players, they were talking to each other, they were getting themselves set up for the next kick out. They knew they were going to score the mark, and they pinned Tyrone in for the next, they won the next three kick outs and got 3 points in a row. So at a stage it was 1-4 apiece, and all of a sudden Donegal were up by 4 points in the space of a few minutes. So that sort of game management, you know, Donegal seem to have got smarter and smarter, and they're getting stronger all the time. A lot of players still to come back in, and we would have talked earlier in the year, I think they played Galway, and something similar happened on Sunday, and that at the start of the second half, Donegal, I suppose, decision making again, Ryan McHugh and Michael Murphy had forced the first two kicks in, got turned over, it wasn't on. And then the next play, the two of them walked together and they ran the ball. And Murphy let in Jamie Brennan for a goal. Something similar against Galway earlier in the year, in that they got a goal early, they were 7 points up, and every man got back. And Galway scored, maybe two goals in the next few minutes because Donegal, this time was different. They got that goal, they went 6 points up, but they stayed up, pressed the next kick out, Jamie Brennan won a free, another score. So that sort of, you know, relentless pressure on Tyrone. Now, listen, Tyrone will look at it and they'll learn a lot from it. And listen, maybe they're holding a wee bit back for the championship, but they have to be impressed.
No doubt they are, I'd say. Look, Vinny, thanks a million for joining us. And hopefully we'll be back to talk next week. Who knows what will happen between now and then. Take care and we'll talk to you soon. Donegal, have you a competition winner for us?
We do. Our winner for our brilliant wellness hamper, thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Green Farm, is Trish Downey from Leakslip. Remember, we have a wellness hamper every night this weekend. So, do listen into the show. Thanks very much for listening. We're back tomorrow at 6. Tara Stewart is up next.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. A quick and easy addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way. 2FM.